Station number 23350, Mr. Malcolm Barker, Baker, reels 3 and 4. Left channel informants, mic only, right channel interviewers, mic.
Mr. Barker, reel 3. We were talking about the trip out on the Empire Orwell. Anything else you remember after Aden about the trip?
The next stop was Colombo. And the first thing, we had to do a 25-mile route march. It was very warm. We had to do a 25-mile route march. And I remember getting off the ship, saw all these men, naked men, bathing in an old shed, where all open to the public. I just didn't realise how the other half lived. We'd done a 25-mile route march.
What was it like? March. It must have been quite tough.
It was not easy, but we'd done it all right because we'd done it. Oh, that was because we'd done them in basic training, so it wasn't too bad. And then we left Colombo, and I always remember the adjutant. He gave us a lecture. Remember two particular things he said. He said if we get lost in Korea, we've got to find the North Star. And go the opposite way, for the obvious reason we were in the south and the enemy was in the north.
What else did he tell you about Korea?
No, he didn't. I can't remember much about Korea. He told us that one thing. I can't remember him telling us much about Korea itself. The other thing was, before we took I don't know if it was before or after, probably after, when we'd done a route march, I always remember this, we'd got to put our socks on inside out because the thread of the sock would then not rub against their feet. Did you know that? You knew that one. What's the point of me telling you? Anyway.
We want to know.
Yeah, anyway, he told us that one. And then the next stop was Singapore. Now, that was a magic stop. The reason being, on the night we were there, it was declared independent, and there was big processions. There was processions out at sea with all the dragons breathing fire and God knows what. It was absolutely brilliant. Really was. That was Singapore. Then we went to Hong Kong. Then we moved up to Hong Kong, and I remember we got on the ferry, went to Kowloon. But not much happening in Hong Kong. Remember seeing the girls with their split skirts. Couldn't believe it. You know, they had the skirt split right up to the legs, you know. And then, of course, we left Hong Kong. And then we got to Busan, and that had been 4 weeks altogether.
Now, what were your first impressions of Busan when you got there? Because there's supposed to be a band play, an American band.
Yeah, there was, yeah.
What do you remember of arriving there?
Well, you took the words right out of my mouth. First thing I remember, it's like any other port, there's this Yankee band, boom, 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 and all this rubbish. And I thought, cool, blimey. But the first real impression is when we got off the boat, it was in battle order, but they put loads of ammunition over our shoulders, and they put stuff in their pockets, and they really overloaded us with stuff, with different things. And then, I will explain. To my utter amazement, we had to throw our tin hats on a heap. There was a heap of tin hats, and we had to throw our tin hats on this heap. And I could never, never, never believe why we had to do that. And I could never understand. I will say it now. I could never understand it. For 50 years, I've asked people, why on earth did we do it? Nobody ever knew. And do you know, believe it or not, about 3 weeks ago, I was watching the telly. The Germans at Stalingrad, and they threw their hats, tin hats away, in the winter it was, and I thought, blimey, that's what we did. And do you know, I thought, I wonder if they'll say why they threw them away. And the reason they threw them away is because it was so cold that the tin hats were ineffective, and they'd freeze to their edge. What they really wanted was balaclavas. And it took me 50 years to get an explanation for that, believe it or not. Funny little thing, but they're little things that care, aren't they?
So you were issued with ammunition, and then handed in your steel
helmet. Food, obviously, to go up with, you know, on the train. We went on an old train with wooden seats, and very quite slow, I remember we went through Taegu, it was called, then Seoul, we went through there. Then we got up towards Jim Jim River and camped out in these fields. And then we were there 3 or 4 days.
Is that what would become known as Britannia Camp later on, or would you not know?
Oh, I didn't know. Could have been. That was before we went in the line, that was. Did they say anywhere else about that? Just before we went in the line. It was, I remember shaving in the mirrors of the vehicles. And it was, we were there 3 or 4 days. And then, of course, we went up into the line.
And what were your impressions of the countryside and the people as you went through, you know, on the trail?
Well, you could see though, it was just a different world. I mean, the stuff they could carry on their backs with a stick, a couple of sticks and furniture, it was unbelievable. And they were all sort of dressed in different clothes, Eastern dress, not Western dress like we dress. And they looked as poor as church mice, to be quite frank with you. You know, it was, and the houses were sort of mud huts and what have you. It was just a different world. They were more like peasants. Just couldn't believe it, really.
Now, when you moved into the line, you went in what they call the Koang San area, you know, which is a big hill.
I'm not sure. I know we went through up this valley, and there was big hills on either side. And it was up near the Im Jim River. And I think the Gloucesters were just in front of that when they got caught. I think it was 217, this little inn in front of it. I've got an idea it was 217, I'm not certain.
And what were your impressions of the area you moved into?
Well, at first, it was hilly like you get Dunstable Downs sort of thing, but a bit more than that. I always remember the first night, slept in the open, on the side of this hill, and they said, keep off the skyline, and we could hear all the machine guns and guns going and people shouting. I thought, bloody hell, we're going to be dead within a week. You never heard a racket like it. And, I mean, that was probably our forward companies, because, as I say, I wasn't quite up the front. I was with HQ Company.
Now, where did you settle in then?
I'm not sure. I can't remember where we first camped. I just can't remember. The dominant feature was 355.
Now, how did you dig your battalion headquarters in? I mean, not your signal section in there.
Well, we just dug a hole in the ground and put the tent over the top of it. Put it about 3 or 4 feet down to give us a bit of protection. That was the idea. And then, I don't know whether Ginger did this, but we did this. We used to make... it's difficult to explain...
Right, that's because the room they can't see. So
now, if you've got an hole in the ground, right, and you get two bits of post, and you put a hole in the wall of the hole, and then bring it back and put it in another hole, so you've got two posts going across, and then we used to put signal wire across the two posts and along, sort of make a spring bed, and that's what we used to lay on. So we were off the ground, off of the wet. I remember Captain Edgeworth, he always told us to have as much blankets underneath us as above. This is particularly during the winter. But that's how we used to make our beds. We used to lay on our backs, and when we got up, we used to have all crisscrosses on our backs. But it was better than sleeping on the floor. And we nearly always slept in our sleeping bags. And nearly always we used to sleep quite a lot in uniform, so in the back, ready, so that we were ready for action if needed. And always, always had your weapon by your bed. Always. Never went out without your weapon.
How big would this dugout be?
Well, it'd be about 6 foot by... No, a bit longer than that. 8 foot by six, something like that. Probably a little bit bigger.
And this was your dugout, or was this a signal's
dugout? That was the four
of
them. That was the signal tent. That was the signal... There was four of us four signallers at headquarters. It'd be a bit bigger than that, and that would be our tent and our sleeping quarters.
And would that be the signals?
No,
you'd have a separate thing.
We'd have a separate hole in the ground for the telephones. And
okay,
that was in a different place.
So this was just where you lived.
That's where we lived.
And what about heating?
because we were nearly always on top of the hill with the signals, because we had to be.
What about the heating?
Well, did Ginger tell her we used to?
Forget Sorry. What Ginger said, yeah.
Well, that's different. Makes me laugh at this. Heating, especially in the winter when it was about 19 below. We used to have a tank, some sort of tank, I can't quite remember, in the middle of the room. And we'd have a chimney, and outside would be a petrol tank, about a 2 gallon tank, full of diesel, I think it was. And you'd have a pipe running in to this central tank, and it would drip diesel, and you would just lit a little fire, and that was just enough to keep you reasonably warm. But I mean, there was occasions when different people sort of set the tents alight, but we had to have something to keep us warm.
So you didn't have any overhead cover, it was just tent over.
Oh, a tent, that's all, yeah, only a tent, yeah.
Now tell me about the actual signals dugout, where you had the telephones and the wireless.
That was similar, but that only had a... That was very similar to a tent, but it was sort of dug in as well, and then it had a small switchboard.
Now tell me about the switchboard, because you haven't, you know...
Well, it was an old-fashioned switchboard where you plug the lines in and you crisscross them. Because I remember one day I was on switchboard duty and Elston Doris Waters were coming. And my major was on the phone. I heard him say... I always remember this. I heard him say, do they show them, he said. And I always remember that. And it was just an old-fashioned switchboard. And that went out to the companies, the four companies, to the major, and back to the B echelon. It was just the communications.
And what else? What about the wirelesses you'd have in the signals dugout?
They were just the normal ones that the ordinary infantrymen had. I can't remember whether they had bigger wirelesses than anybody else. So we must have done, I'll tell you for why, because we used to have to charge batteries up. And we used to use these batteries for the wireless. So we must have had bigger batteries. We must have had bigger wirelesses to get to the companies. Yeah, we must have had, because we had these batteries. We used to have to keep charging them up.
How did you charge them?
On a generator. Yeah, had a generator, and that charged them up. We used to have to man this signal station. This is another thing. We used to have to man this signal station 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we did, once we done one night and three nights off, we'll do 4 hours of eight, whatever way we done it, we'd still got to do it, and we had to do it, and that was it. And, I particularly remember Christmas. That was...
Hang on, we're far away.
A bit far forward, yeah. This is when we're now talking when we were first there.
That's right. So you had to charge the batteries.
We had to charge them with the generator.
Now, what about... your actual rotor. How was your rotor organised?
I'm just trying to explain. There was four of us. One, you'd do all night and have three nights off, or then we changed it, you'd do 4 hours and 8 hours, and then have two nights off. We kept changing it all the time, but it didn't make... I think we changed it out of boredom or anything, but... That's what we used to have to do, but we never stuck to one particular rotor the whole 12 months.
About the rotor for people going out to check the wires?
Oh, well, I don't remember that. We used to do that in the daytime.
How did you do it? Just explain just what you do.
Well, we just walked from A to B and follow the wire right along.
Would it be broken often, or...?
Well, no, there wasn't, no. No, we never found many broken ones at all. No, it was quite good, really, because we... We didn't get shelled. We only got shell bad once, but that I'll tell you about that later on. But generally, the communications were good.
Now, you moved into this area. It's in the Koang San area, they call it. I mean,
yeah. I didn't know the name of it.
And
that shows you there where we lived, doesn't it?
Well, that's got a roof.
Well, we didn't have a roof.
Now, The big thing that happened while you were there was after a while there was some patrolling, but then there was a big Chinese attack on the Kingsland Scottish borders on hills 217 and 317.
That's it. I said 217.
And there's also a lot of artillery fire at the time. Now, do you remember this?
No, we were behind the line 3 or 4 pounds. I don't remember it. I remember it happening, but we had nothing to do with it. The only thing was that traffic was a lot heavier. But it, you know, obviously we were busier. But we were never involved in any fighting at all. Never, thank God.
So anything happened before the next? I mean, you were there until 13th of November, roundabouts, right. And then you pulled back to you went to the Sami Chon Valley.
Yeah, that's the.
Is that the next thing you remember the Sami Chon? Or is there anything else?
No,
about
I remember the Sami Chon. So remember, we put up our tent in a graveyard.
Deliberately or accidentally?
No, deliberately. Don't know why, but we did. Because we had to get the high, fairly high ground, you see, for the signals. Suppose that's for the reason. But I remember the Sami Chon.
Now, what was the setup there?
Well, exactly the same as before. We were behind the lines and we were running the switchboard and whatever.
So take me through a typical day on the switchboard in the Sami Chon Valley. Well, I mean, you know, as a signaller, what would a typical day be like for you?
Well, God. Normally it'd be fairly quiet, to be honest with you. It's just if the plumbing light come up on the switchboard, they wanted so you just plugged them through. It was just straightforward, really.
It sounds like your duties were really more switchboard than wireless.
Oh yeah, more switchboard than wireless. Yeah, definitely. Because we had to. Well, there was no question of it. We had to make sure that somebody was there. I mean, we used to in the summer. You might not believe this, but in the summer when it was really hot. And then in the night, when you was there on your own, we used to have a bucket of water, cold water. Swill our faces with cold water to keep awake. Because it was a quartermaster offence if you was asleep. I mean, that was really, that was our main function, to make sure that was manned. You know?
The switchboard?
Yeah, the switchboard, yeah.
And were there any problems with the switchboard that could arise using it?
No, they were so basic that there was hardly anything to go wrong.
How did the plugging system work?
There was holes in the board, and you just plug your lines into them, and you had to wind it up to get a signal to go to the other end to get them to receive your call. It was a old wind up thing. I mean, they were as ancient when you think about it.
They worked.
It worked. Yeah, it was so basic. There's not a lot could go wrong with it.
Now, you know, in a typical, tell me about the food you got up there. What sort of rations were you?
Well, just ordinary rations. The only thing I remember, we had good food. Then I particularly remember we had during a cold winter, we had a lot of curries. Yeah, we had an awful lot of curries. And I like curry. I still like it. We had a lot of curries.
Was that the first time you'd had it?
Yeah, I hadn't had it before. And one other thing which we had, I'd be interested to know if you know this. One other thing we had in the winter, believe it or not, was a rum ration. Did Ginger tell you that? He did.
Tell me about the rum ration then.
Well, it was thick old stuff, and it was red, and it was real like treacle. And I didn't like it, but I used to drink it.
How did they issue it?
They just put in a little glass, about 16th of a pint, about like a whiskey measure, and just put in a glass or a little plant container, and you drank it, and that was it. Whether you liked it or not, you drank it because it would get your tummy warm. Yeah.
And what else about the food?
No, nothing else really. Oh, well.
Didn't you get the K rations or the American rations?
Oh, that was it. Yeah. We used to have 50 fags, that was it, that's another thing. We had 50 fags a week in a tin. And I did smoke then. And
when you started smoking, was it?
Yeah, that's when I started smoking, because we had no wirelesses, no girls, no women, no beer, and the only thing we had was our fags, and we became good at taking the mickey out of each other. And I can still do that today.
In what way? What do you mean?
Well, I mean, I can't really say over there. Can't really say the one I always remember, because it's not... It's a little bit naughty. Well, it ain't naughty, but do you want to put that off and I'll tell you?
Well, only if you want to tell on the tape, otherwise, no.
We don't mind. No. Well, one of the things was, if you met a bloke walking the opposite way, I always remember it, and you might have known him by sight, you'd say, "Have you seen Bob?" And he'd say, "Bob who?" And you'd say, "Bob down and suck your ass." And that, and believe it or not, he'd come back 10 minutes later and he'd get you on it. And that is what we used to do. That's the sort of thing we lived on. Actually taking the mickey out of each other. Because that was all we had. And that was the one I always remembered.
Any others?
No, I can't remember any others, but it was all mickey taking all the time. When you say about food, you don't want me to go on about my Christmas cake, do you?
Okay, go on, tell us about the Christmas cake.
When you mention food, on the Christmas day, that would have been 52, yeah, no, 51.
Yeah, Christmas 51.
Christmas 51, that's right. We cut the cards. The HQ company had a little do down in the valley, like where they cut the cards who had manned the switchboard all day, and I lost, and I had to man the switchboard all day, on my own on Christmas Day, and I did get down a bit, but I accepted it. We cut the cards, but the thing that really got me was, my mum had sent me a Christmas cake in a tin, and it arrived a few days before Christmas, and I kept it until Christmas Day. And I kept it until Christmas night. And when I opened the tin up, it was all crumbs. And I cried my eyes out. Absolutely got me. Really did. I always remember that. Really cried my eyes out. That really got me down. It wasn't much got me down, but that did.
Did you get many letters and parcels?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah, we didn't get many parcels. Well, remember my mum sending me a big pair of gloves, which I asked for. The one thing I did get, one of my aunties, her husband had been in the war, the one who was driver, every week without fail, she would send me the Bedfordshire Times. Never failed. Lovely it was, all the local news. And then we used to get the football, I remember we used to get the football results on the Monday after the Saturday. And if you wanted paper like the Bedfordshire Times, you got it 8 days later.
And you rode home. Now, you lend in the letters to the War Museum, who probably have it in documents. But can you tell us what you'd write? I mean, because was writing home very important to you?
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, well, you don't need me to tell you that the mail was the thing that kept you going. I mean, everybody loved their mail, golly, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the mail, it always will be. The mail was the one thing you look forward to.
And what would you write back to them?
Well, it's all in there.
Just to
tell her I was well.
Would you tell her what things were really like, or would you try and make it easier?
Oh, no, I never told her. I never told her what it was like. I can't really remember. I mean, the best of spirits, you see, listening to AFN, Joe Stafford. Oh, yeah.
So they can look at these letters for themselves in the Department of Documents.
That's when I was in Japan on leave.
Now, what about the latrines? What were the latrines like?
Oh, they were Essien nets, all dug in the ground, with sort of a box you sat on. But I remember once I was out in this latrine, I had a blanket over me. Well, can I say this or not? When we, in the cold weather, when we used to go to these 8 lines outside latrines, no roof, cold as hell, they used to say, where's Charlie? And the saying was, oh, he's gone for a shit with a blanket around him, because you had to have a blanket around you because you froze, you see. And I remember once I was on the toilet, this was in the summer, and a blooming snake come for me. I couldn't believe it. A blooming snake come straight for me. And I never got off so quick in my life. Yeah.
A big snake? Or?
Well, I think it was a grass snake, but as far as I was concerned, it was a bloody snake. And I was going to get out of the way. I didn't know what a snake was. I'd never seen one. God, boy, that was about the biggest danger I got in. God, frightened me to bloody death.
What about the snakes? Were snakes a big problem?
Well, no, I don't think so. I mean, I suppose there was an odd feel about, but the big problem, funny to mention.
Were you frightened of snakes?
Oh, I'm frightened of snakes anyway. Yeah, I'm frightened of snakes, full stop. So.
Now, what about other creepy crawlers?
Well, no, it's not the creepy crawlers. The big problem was the rats.
Why were they such a problem?
Well, because they left, they contaminated the water. And they'd bite you, like, you know, if you was asleep. And I actually got bitten by a rat. And That was the biggest danger I had. And the next thing I knew, I was sort of going unconscious. And I remember being put in an ambulance, and all these Indians sticking blooming needles into me. They were Indians. The medics were Indians.
And what did you got?
Well, you get Wells disease. Have you ever heard of it? Yeah, you get Wells disease, and it can kill you. There was blokes killed by Wells disease.
And you got it?
Yeah, well, they thought I'd got it, or whether I had it or not, I don't know. But anyway, they whipped me away down to Seoul in hospital with all these needles sticking in me, unconscious. And then I had a fortnight in hospital in Seoul, and then I was at Pusan another fortnight for recuperation. And then I always remember that because all I ever read was the Reader's Digest, which I found very, very interesting. Never read one for years after that. But when I got back, the journey back to the regiment was unbelievable. I was in a three-tonner, going back from Pusan up the line, which is about 20 miles, and nobody had feed us. We went to the Canadians. I couldn't find a regiment, Leicester Regiment. Yanks, then the Yanks give us a bit of food, and eventually, very late at night, about midnight, I got back, 11 o'clock, I got back to found the Norfolk's headquarters at last. And it was winter, and when I got to the tent, there was four blokes in it, my normal three blokes and a relief, and I could hardly get in the tent. I always remember, and I got in the front door, and I was as cold as ice, and within half an hour, somebody was kicking me, and it was Major Crampton. He said, "Is that you, Barker?" I always remember, and I said, "Yes, sir. How are you?" "Okay, sir." And straight away, he said to these others, "Right, away from the fire. Barker sleeps by the fire. He's just back from hospital." And he made the others move and put me by the fire. I always remember that.
Were you still his personal signaller?
I was still his signaller,
all
the while.
What did that entail while you were out there in Korea?
Well, whenever he went out on manoeuvres, or he went out to four companies, or wherever he left Battalion HQ, I had to go with him. You know, if he visited the companies or BS, and I had to go with him as his signaller. And whenever we moved, I was his signaller.
And I was just carrying a wireless?
Just with a big wireless on my back and sitting in the Jeep with him.
But he was at headquarters.
Headquarters.
So he wouldn't be going forward into action.
Oh, no.
Visiting the other companies.
Yes, the four companies. Oh, no, he was...
Would you have to use your wireless when you were out there?
Oh, yeah.
What sort of messages would you be sending?
Well, I don't know. ETA, time of arrival, you know, things like that. You had to be very careful. You didn't use the radios no more than you could help, to be quite frank with you. But I can't really remember. But anything he wanted to send it over, I did it. But he was a nice man, he was, Major Crampton. I often wondered afterwards, because he was a little short bloke and I was 6 foot. And it didn't occur to me years later. I thought, blimey, I'd have got the first bullet, being the biggest one. But anyway, it didn't happen.
What about some of the other officers at headquarters? You mentioned the intelligence officer. What was he? Was that Stanford? Or?
No, that was Dave Phone. Phone. P-H-O. No. Phone. It's some, F-O-N-E, that's it. He was intelligence. He wasn't an officer, but he was... I don't know what rank he was. But he was a... Well, obviously... He was headquarters intelligence, you know what the intelligence
is. I thought you mentioned the intelligence officer that we were going to interview sometime.
Yeah, that was him. I used to play drafts with him.
Phone, all right.
Yeah, Phone, yeah. He was the intelligence officer for the battalion. I suppose he gathered all the information, you know what I mean. They call it a collator in the police force.
So he wasn't actually an officer?
I don't think he was an officer, no. I'm not sure. I don't think he was. He might have been. I don't know what rank he was.
Now, anything else about your time in the Samichon?
They
were doing some patrolling. Would you keep in touch with what was going on with the patrols? Because
they
had a wireless.
No.
That was
new. We didn't know anything about what was going on up the front. I remember also, but one thing I do remember at Christmas, this was at Christmas, a new year, they just in front of the four battalions was a little hill, just before we get the Samichon, and they reckoned, the whisper was that the Chinese were going to attack us on the new year. And